Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Mobile apps, websites, and data about health and fitness, in other words, your lifestyle, provide health information to people outside the doctor-patient health plan relationship. Now, should you be concerned? Because what are the privacy regulations? Are there any? Well, we're going to discuss all this. We're going to discuss the risks and the rewards. My guest is Jules Polonetsky. He is the executive director of the Future of Privacy Forum. Jules, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Great. Glad to be here.
You know, it's really interesting. In discussions with you, I've learned so much about the fact that information about our health is not just that which is generated within the doctor-patient relationship. It is far beyond that, and it's used for marketing and all kinds of issues. Now, let's just talk briefly about the traditional doctor-patient relationship. That is limited to some extent, except in some states they sell this data. But just give us a little bit of an overview of the protections, and that really basically is the HIPAA protections that we're all told about every time we go to a doctor's office. Is that correct?
Exactly. People remember walking into a doctor's office or a hospital appointment, and amidst the other forms you fill out, you probably acknowledged that you got a health privacy notice. You probably didn't look at it, but if you had read it, you'd have been told, here's how the data that you're going to provide now, the confidential information that the doctor or the hospital have, here's how it can be used, here's how it's going to be protected, and that comes with a whole bunch of restrictions. You know, if you go visit your doctor, he can't sell it to his cousin who would then call you at home and say, hey, I heard you've got a fungus, I've got, something to sell you. And look, that law, HIPAA, has its flaws. It has gaps, but generally consumers understand that doctor health, the kind of information that ends up going to your insurance company to pay for your health bills, is covered by a baseline privacy standard. It gives you rights. Certain things can't be shared, and you've got all the rights to opt out. But increasingly, we see critics debating the effectiveness of HIPAA, and then increasingly we see a lot of data that is not covered by HIPAA. It just didn't exist years ago. Fitness data, things that come from the the well-known Fitbits and Jawbones and Nike Fuel Bands. There's an entire quantified self movement where people increasingly record all the information about what they do, how many steps they took, every item. And then I think a lot of people who aren't as extreme, but like me, if I'm in an interesting restaurant, I might say, hey, here's what I had, or I've got a group of guys on Facebook. We call ourselves the International Men's Weight Loss Challenge. And it's just a bunch of us, and every so often we post, oh my goodness, I'm training for a marathon, I'm in good shape, or oh, I ate too much, and can you believe it? And we encourage each other. And now that information is there, right? I mean, it's on Facebook.
Right.
What are the rules for what Facebook or an advertiser or someone else can do with it? It's not covered by HIPAA.
There are not many rules, are there?
Well, there are not too many rules. You've got the basic rules that exist today when it comes to advertising and marketing. Companies can't be deceptive and that sort of thing. The advertising industry has some very general rules. They will show you ads based on your web surfing. If you go to WebMD or you go search for certain illnesses, obviously we know that we get targeted ads because of the terms we put in. And so there are profiles that are linked to usually our cookie that can be swapped and sold. If I'm an advertiser and I want to reach people who seem to be researching Alzheimer's, I can go buy that information, and that information isn't protected by law. It might be very inaccurate, right? I might be researching Alzheimer's for a book report. Because I'm worried about symptoms, or I might be a caregiver. But there is that big web streaming profile that exists that can be used to target ads. And so there are some industry rules that give you the rights to opt out. Many people have seen the little triangle eye on banner ads. You may not have noticed it, but if you see a banner ad and it's got a little triangle eye, that ad has been selected for you.
That's Ad Choices, isn't it?
That's the Ad Choices program. And right. So you could opt out, and then the information about your web surfing ought not to be used by those participating companies.
But that doesn't stop other people from using it because it's available. It's out there. It's available to...
Increasingly, there is a good deal of information out there. Yeah. You know, in the past, the medical records stayed in the hands of a doctor, or maybe it went to a researcher. You know, there are people today who want to take those records with them, and that's a good thing.
Sure. Right?
These are our records. We shouldn't be embarrassed to ask a doctor. A lot of people are ashamed. They feel that, you know, the doctor thinks that maybe they're going to, you know, go take it to another provider, so they're awkward about it. But by law now, you have a right to get that information.
Right.
Companies are working on making it more easy for you to just download, and then perhaps you would take it with you. I mean, why should you not have it on a fob or...
Well, it can be very, very useful. My doctor provides me a little disc if I want to carry it around with me in case I have an emergency. Not that I have a particular health issue. I don't.
Yeah. Well, imagine
for all those people out there listening.
and you know, you were, God forbid, unconscious, or you, frankly, you just showed up and you didn't know all the details.
Right, exactly.
Of your care. Why should you not be able to say to the emergency room doctor, here's my password, you know, pull up and you can see all the medications I'm on.
So there are benefits to information sharing. We can tell that. It'll lead to enhancement of treatment, getting accurate treatment to you faster. There are all kinds of things that really can benefit you from having health information. But
and
when we get to the grayer area of how it's used to market to you, I guess that's where people develop concerns. Now, I know that the Future of Privacy Forum has been very involved in looking at this, as you say, consumer-generated health information.
Yes, certainly. And, you know, one more item before we get to the consumer piece, but an area that's built off the regulated information but may not be covered is the health information that has been de-identified. And so researchers or pharma companies or anybody wanting to really get information increasingly looks at this data that is available. And some of it, again, is very useful. We want to know how hospitals are doing, right? I mean, we
yes,
want to know which hospital has got the best results when it comes to heart disease. The federal government is now pushing, as part of Obamacare and as part of just reform in general, we want hospitals reducing their readmission rates. And so that means somebody needs to know how different hospitals are doing after they've let you out. Are they?
Well, I know one of the complaints have been in the consumer industry is that it's difficult sometimes to get information on hospitals, infection rates, and that sort of thing. And there have been some studies done, but I don't know how readily available that kind of information is for use by the consumer. And certainly, it is of great value.
Well, increasingly, there's pressure to.
You know, Jules, can you hold that thought for just a second and let me just let our listeners know that they are tuned in. Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker, and my guest is Jules Polonetsky. He is the executive director, and I believe you're also the co-chair of the Future of Privacy Forum. Do I have that correct, Jules?
That's right.
Okay. So anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
Well, increasingly, there's pressure to get that available out. The administration has been very supportive of open data, of pushing government agencies and other entities that have data to get it out there so that critics, analysts, researchers, consumers can go grab it and then figure out how to make it useful, how to give us better information to make smarter decisions. But the risk is this data going to be re-identified?
Right. Are they going to know it's me or you or anybody else?
If I put it out at a very high level and I don't include a lot of information about any individual, then I lose some of the utility. I mean, we might want to know, are African Americans being readmitted at a higher rate, either because of some illness issues, maybe because of a discrimination issue, who knows? So I might want to include something sensitive like race. I might want to know, are low-income people being treated unfairly? So I might want income in there. I might want to know, what about by region? You know, by are people in certain cities or certain neighborhoods? Do I live near something that might be causing an environmental issue? And so,
cancer rate.
I mean,
I think Montgomery, Maryland has one of the highest cancer rates in the country.
So if the researchers who say, look, we need as much data as possible, and we need a lot of information about each user. So even when you aggregate that, it creates some risk. Scientific experts have showed that they can crunch the numbers with sophisticated tools, or they can grab other information that might be available and munge it together, and they can identify some number of people. And so we have to really figure out, well, what's the benefit here? Is there a real risk? Maybe we allow the data to be available, but we don't post it publicly, right? Maybe only researchers or whoever asks for it has to sign a confidentiality agreement and promise not to seek to identify it. Well, some critics say, oh, we don't trust that. There'll be a data breach. It'll be out there. We don't rely on contracts or administrative controls. You have to technically prevent it in any way from being identified. And then the research community and some consumer advocates and others say, well, we might cure the next disease. I mean, we might make great breakthroughs, reduce, healthcare costs, reduce hospital readmissions. Why should a very small chance of identification, which I'd have to, break the law or violate a contract to even do, should that stop me in my tracks? So,
can we define some of the risks to consumers? Let's just take Shirley Consumer here. If I'm going out and putting out information about how much I exercise and how much I walk and all of this sort of stuff, how much I eat, put it all together, what are the risks to me personally of having this information out there? Is an insurance company likely to look at it and say, look at Shirley, she drinks too much or she eats too much or she doesn't get enough sleep? And put it together and identifying me, and can the insurance companies hook onto this and use this kind of data to say we don't want her as we don't want to insure this person?
Right. So when it comes to
I do any of those things, Jules, you got to understand that.
Well, I'm looking that up here now.
But we have to have it right. We have to have an example.
Right, looking at the cookie on your computer.
Uh huh.
Well, so we have a huge explosion now in data that just was never available before. Right.
People so some of this is really new to us.
Well, these fitness trackers, I mean, who was wearing them 2 or 3 years ago? Now, it's not a big surprise to see somebody.
Okay, now may I interrupt you just a moment here and say to you, now, these fitness trackers, that goes into a central place somewhere, unless you opt out of sharing that information. So whoever's providing this fitness tracker is going to be maintaining a record for you. Is that correct?
Well, the companies all have different rules, but typically these fitness trackers work with an app that lets you look at your phone and see how many steps you've taken. They often let you compete or share it with your friends. And so there is a central location at the sometimes very small app developer who came up with this technology, and sometimes it's a big company. You know, Nike has a Nike Fuel Band, and they're pretty conservative about how they use their data, but, they're obviously a very large company. But then there are some very popular startups that didn't exist a couple of years ago, with Jawbone, Fitbit. I mean, they've become very, highly known brand names, but they're small companies. And they even let you add, they're not just about steps anymore, right? Because people got upset. People said, look, I'm doing yoga, and why am I not getting credit for that?
Right.
So their algorithms now know you're riding a bike.
That's scary.
Well, that's scary. How about you're having sex?
Oh, dear.
Right? I mean, every time you move in some unique pattern, the algorithms increasingly are saying, oh, you're sleeping, right? I mean, that's a nice benefit. A lot of these show.
Yeah, but you don't sleep enough, they'll say, or you sleep too much.
And indeed, they will tell you, here's how you compare to other people. And so they're looking at your data, and they're saying you sleep less than the average, 32-year-old, you're in the range that is considered, dangerous for such and such age. So look, there's a lot of value. I mean, people are getting more fit. And the
well, we're paying attention to it. We're keeping track of it, but so is somebody else.
Well, you know, so one risk is inadvertent sharing. So Fitbit, which is one of the popular fitness trackers, they had an integration with social media because people wanted to share. And they had the ability for people to add in, like I described, you know, yes, I want credit for the fact that I'm having sex and here's how many calories I think I burnt. And they let you add that in. And some people didn't realize that it was set to share by default. And so, hey, you share your, you know, how long you ran, maybe that's fun. But they didn't realize that if they filled in that they'd had, you know, moderate to vigorous sexual activity, that that was then being shared out on the web. And, you know, they had a very embarrassing situation. And so, you know, you have, A, that risk of embarrassment. So nothing terrible happened other than, you know, people being mortified. But you then do have...
Especially when your spouse is on vacation and you're not.
Yes.
Or on a business
trip. Well, that certainly
trip.
Could lead to some serious trouble.
That's
you know,
right.
Companies, you know, a lot of large companies are self-insured, right? They pick up the health bills themselves because they're very large, so they act as
so they want to know about their employees and what they're doing in their off time, their downtime, or whatever. Well, let's just take a, while we've taken a breath here, let me just tell our listeners that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Jules Polonesky. He is the executive director and co-chair of the Future of Privacy Forum. So, Jules, sorry to interrupt you.
Well, if I'm a big employer and I probably have a number of wellness programs now, your listeners who work at bigger companies probably, you know, are familiar with these benefits. The smaller companies or the self-employed usually don't have them. But, you know, for those who are lucky enough to have a full service plan, you know, your employer probably offers access to sort of advice over the phone or maybe a discount at a health club. Incentives to get you healthier, not only because you'll show up at work, but because you then won't run up gigantic medical bills. If they can get their workforce to be, you know, 5 or 10% healthier.
Now, when does this kind of information become a negative?
And
I guess the even bigger question, all right, suppose we want to participate in something like Fitbit. How do we protect that from being shared with the world?
Well, the question that the employers are trying to figure out is, if I've given 100 Fitbits, 1,000 to my workforce, and I've spent $120 each, guess what I want to know? Is it working? And so I could informally survey, in which case you're all going to promise that you've been doing a lot of exercise.
Right.
But can I call up Fitbit and say, hey, look, I just bought these in bulk. Could you tell me how many are being used? How many are being used every day? How many footsteps? And listen, if people are entering their weight, which these things let you do, how many pounds have my employees lost? Now, you know, that can be a little bit sensitive. There was a university that mandated the collecting and reporting of this information. And you can imagine the reaction from their workforce, which was, you know, hell no. But are there ways that if they properly aggregate it, and is there a way that we can trust them to not misuse it so that, you know, the right sort of researchers or maybe even, you know, companies that make the commitment that, listen, I really want, I'm motivated for you to be healthy. I don't care about you ever, but I want to know whether these different, you know, things that I'm doing to prod better behavior. But look,
yeah, whether or not they're doing it as a group. If you identify it as a group, are your employees in general getting healthier, or are you looking at individual employees? There's a vast difference as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Well, look, there's a number of things the average consumer can do. When you set up these apps, many of them have this social integration. And so you want to be careful about exactly how you set the defaults. You may not want to be automatically sharing everything you do.
Well, wouldn't it be wise for a consumer before they even start to use an app or even think about it to go explore that app and see, learn everything they can about the options and how the data is used?
You certainly want to take a look in the App Store. The California Attorney General has required, since she's got good ability to enforce the law there in California, where mm-hmm. many of these big tech companies are. So she's required that Apple and Google and the other app store providers insist that apps put a privacy policy in the app store. So even before you, you know, buy the device or you download the app, you can take a look and see what they do. Now, the problem is these policies are written for, well, people like me who want to read the legal language and know the difference between anonymous and aggregated and the like. They're not easy to understand for the average consumer.
That, that's a complaint that we hear at Call for Action, that privacy policies, give me a break. I mean, they're driving you crazy.
We argue, look, a privacy policy is important because it makes this legal commitment. That's the way the Federal Trade Commission can take action. But that's got nothing to do with how you tell a consumer what you do. Yep. And if you don't do too much with data, then fine, leave it in the privacy policy. But if data is a key part because you're collecting it, that's not a disclosure. That ought to be a, you know, a central part of the feature. You know, when I go to Amazon, I don't have to read the privacy policy to know that they're tracking what I buy and trying to sell me more stuff. I mean, it's like, that's what it says. Hey, we think you want more of this because this
like
is what
you do. Like my e-books.
Right? And so we need many of these companies learning how to lean in to their consumer relationship and say, look, here's why we want this data. And if you give it to us, here are the features that are enabled. And don't worry, we don't do anything with it. Or, yes, you know what?
We do, and here's what we do. It should be straightforward. Privacy policies, to me, to have value, should be something that the average consumer can sit down, read, and understand, and it shouldn't be a zillion pages long. But unfortunately, sometimes they aren't. But I think, so what you're, what I hear you saying, Jules, is that, yes, this information can be useful. It can even be helpful to you as an individual, or it could be harmful if it's you're able to be identified. So I guess what we as consumers have to do is to be aware of the benefits that we might get. Like, as you say, you're on a weight program. You've got to, you're sharing this with a bunch of people. That in itself may motivate people to help lose weight or to exercise more or whatever, because we, if you're competitive, you want to get out there and do better than the group. But at the same time, if that information is being collected and could be used negatively about you, so is it up to the consumer to figure out how much of this they want to do? That's what you're basically saying.
You know, a lot of it is on the consumer today. Luckily, there are more tools. If you're using a, you know, an Apple iPhone, if you're using any one of the Google Android phones, they both have a feature now called limit ad tracking. And so if you don't like the idea that the fact that you're using a particular app is going to be used then to give you ads and other apps and the like, you can use that limit ad tracking feature. It's a little bit hard to find, but it's there. And that tells all of the third parties. Now, that's being enforced by Apple and Google because they've decided they want to give, you know, that control to users.
And so, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing. I think the challenge is we need some more norms so that I could say to you, look, you know what these apps do? Well, all they do is ads, and they don't sell the data. We don't have that kind of code of conduct or that understanding. You know what? They allow their data to be used, but really only for research, you know, in some aggregated way.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say aggregated, that means that it would not be identifiable that I was the person that was involved in this or that you were involved in it. It would only be a bunch of data that was not identifiable.
Exactly. And look, the takeaway at the end of the day for a lot of folks is that, you know, all of this free information online,
it's not free.
If you go to, you know, the NIH and you go to the Mayo Clinic and so forth, but a lot of the information you see that is provided by various companies or, you know, even publishers, the fact is people are being paid. They're being paid with your data because you're being tracked.
Right.
For some people, that's
you know
a fair
what?
Deal.
This has been fascinating. We could go on forever, Jules. This is such an extraordinary subject. But thank you so much for joining us. I've just loved it. And the website is thefutureofprivacy.org. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Jules Polonetsky. He's the executive director of the Future of Privacy Forum. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.